And Amanda, you mentioned that you have a family as well, and as a mother, what sort of support systems are available at the bar counter for yourself as a working woman having to manage both her family commitments as well as her working commitments?
Well, Brendan, it's a good question. And just to be clear, so in relation to the Bar Council, it's really like, in a sense, the organization that promotes and represents the bar internally and externally. So when I was chair of the bar, I actually had an employed position for a year. But all the time up until then, I was a full-time barrister.
Right.
So when I was chair of International, for example, that was in addition to being a full-time barrister. And so for barristers, we have looked at this very hard to see how we can improve the lifestyle, if you like, and the support for women in particularly those with caring responsibilities. And of course, that could be older parents or someone else in their family. It needn't be children, but obviously very often it is children. And in the last year or so, we've put together a thing called the Accelerator Project or Program, which is seven or so different projects, which are specifically started off with the aim of improving the lot of women at the bar and actually improving the chances of them progressing and retaining them, because we have a big problem with retaining women, and particularly at about the time that they become mothers, typically. So the first thing is a project that starts off with the first 7 years of practice, so what we would call the young bar. I mean, that's quite an arbitrary figure, the first 7 years. But what it does, we think, is to bring the foundation of where your career will go or can go. So it's really important to start at the very beginning, getting that proper diversification of work and getting the all sorts of people doing really having really good opportunities and support. So that's the first thing. This may sound as though it's got nothing to do with the question, but in my view, it absolutely does, because if you don't have a strong, enjoyable career at the beginning, the chances of you thinking, "Do you know what, this is all too hard, I'm going to stop," are much greater. So if you've got a supported, strong career that you think is going forward, you're much more likely to want to stay in it. And what's more, it will be more fulfilling and you will presumably earn a better living. The second thing that we've done is to put in place practice management guidelines and standards. So that's about allocating work fairly, charging people out at comparable rates if they're at a comparable level, and marketing them in the same way, whatever their gender and background. And that, again, is really important for, I believe, for retaining women and making it easier for them to stay at the bar. One of the funny things, which probably will not even be on many of your colleagues' radars, is the legal directories, such as Chambers and Partners and the Legal 500. I mean, those are directories which people use if they want to instruct someone. They might look someone up. And typically, women are massively underrepresented. And where they're there, the kind of words that are used about them are completely different. They might say hardworking, whereas for a man, they might say hard-hitting. And when you're thinking about what barrister you want, well, you're going to take it as a given, aren't you, that they're going to be hardworking. So you want the one that's hard-hitting. And so the language in the directories and who gets into the directories, because it's all a bit nepotistic in a way, or self-fulfilling, is an issue as well. So that's something else that we're trying to address. We've got mentoring schemes, which are obviously people who have gone through the experience, and we're also giving sort of guidance and training on how to mentor within Chambers and outside of Chambers. And I think that's really important as well. And actually, if I may say so, I know a lot of people think that if you see somebody in a senior position, so see someone like me who's had a family and managed to become a QC and be a part-time judge and be chair of the bar, then you see that it's possible. And I'm not for a moment suggesting that it's easy. And I've been extremely fortunate to have a lot of support in my home life. And I think it's necessary to have that when you have children, actually, whether that's a grandparent, which obviously COVID has made more difficult. COVID is a whole other issue we can talk about. But whether it's, you know, some other kind of childcare, whether it's just a supportive partner who's prepared to do their 50% or so or be flexible. I mean, you know, the number of sports days I missed, for example, and my husband went instead of me. I mean, obviously, I'd much rather have been at sports day than at Barnet County Court. But, you know, that's the reality. You don't have that flexibility sometimes. And so I think all of these things add up. And then if I could just add this, that we've taken huge strides to try to address sexual harassment and bullying. And so really all of this, if I may say so, and we're just one cog, the Bar Council's just one cog, lots of specialist bar associations, the circuits, the Inns of Court, solicitors, law groups of barristers and solicitors, all addressing the same thing. So I don't, you know, we haven't got the sole answer, but all we're trying to do really is to change the culture and make it more accessible and more enjoyable and easier to engage, I think. So those are the things that the Bar Council and others are doing sort of outwardly. And just one other thing I should say actually as well, which is that we've been very engaged with the judiciary to try to ensure that we don't have only men going forward to get senior positions in the judiciary.
Right. Amanda, it's really great.
If I can turn off this hoover, hold on 1 second. Okay, sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic to hear about the type of support programs as well as all the policies and the work that you've been doing as the chair of the Bar Council. I also know that you are a bencher on the executive committee of the Middle Temple, as well as a trustee of the Slim Foundation, which is a educational charity working with senior judges and justice institutions around the world to improve justice systems. So, how do you manage your time while taking on all these additional responsibilities?
Okay, well, I think the first thing to say is that I love it all. So I think that makes it much easier to do. I think the Slim Foundation is an amazing, amazing organization. I don't know if you know much about it, but it basically, by invitation, never pushing itself forward, by invitation, it goes to other judges around the world and justice systems and helps them to we share what we do and they share what they do, and we try to improve how justice is delivered around the world. And one of the most amazing things that I have done was to go to Oman and to be involved in a program for Omani judges to talk to them about bribery and corruption and how to deliver judgments, how to deal with expert witnesses, so sort of judgecraft. How amazing that a white woman could be doing this training for judges who are actually doing Sharia law in as well as a sort of traditional legislative law, but also who are typically don't learn from women. What a fantastic opportunity. So to answer your question directly, I'm quite tired a lot. But I think because I'm so enthusiastic, I feel very lucky to be doing it. And yes, I'm not very good at sitting doing nothing. I think that's the other thing. In fact, I'm particularly bad at it. That's not a very helpful answer, is it, for you and your colleagues? But I'm afraid it's true.
No, it is. And thank you so much for providing us with this information. And picking up on your point about the Slim Foundation trying to improve justice systems throughout the world, I would like to link this to the pro bono initiatives that are available in the bar. And if you'd like, I'm sure you have been involved in many, which one you found most fulfilling and why?
So Advocate is the specific charity that the overarching one that used to be called the Bar Pro Bono Unit, but it's the specific charity for the bar, and the one for solicitors is called Law Works. And Advocate had the most record-breaking year it's ever had last year in 2020, which is incredible when you think that so many barristers were struggling because the courts were, if not shut, they were operating at a very, very limited level. Certainly about a year ago, if you remember, justice really was teetering on the edge of whether it was going to be able to keep going or not. Anyway, they and other types of organisations such as CLIPS, which is the Chancery practitioners, again, pro bono units, which helps people that are going to the Chancery courts. They're just there. And there are also ones for family courts and mediation. All of those sorts of initiatives are incredibly important. One of the things that I spent a lot of last year doing, first of all, was promoting them because they're fantastic. But secondly, making sure that government does not rely on them instead of properly funding legal representation. And that's a difficult line to tread, actually. You need to have people who are doing both. And it's easy for big solicitors firms to say, well, you know, we require all our solicitors to do X hours of pro bono. Those people are still being paid their salary. If you're a barrister, you're doing it when you're not earning money because you're self-employed. Well, I should say self-employed barristers are doing it out of your own time, and it is genuinely earning you nothing. On the other hand, first of all, it's a fantastic thing to do. It gives you experience that you might well not get in your day job, if you like. You might not get the opportunity to do the kind of level of work or the area of work that you are doing. And just to give you an example, one of the ones that a lot of criminal practitioners used to do, I think it's less prolific now, but certainly when I was starting off, was doing cases in the Privy Council, which were death row cases from the Caribbean. So in many cases of murder in Caribbean nations, they'd carry the death penalty. And so there would then be appeals from, and their court of appeal ultimately was the Privy Council. So if something went wrong in the trial process, they were first of all very serious cases, and second, and very often would be far beyond the years of the practitioner who was involved in the UK, supported very often by, you know, amazing solicitors from great law firms. So it's that kind of opportunity which you might not otherwise get. For me, the most amazing, I think, pro bono thing I ever did, and it happened when I was a QC, but it was quite outside my area, was I was asked to help to draft and what was described by the Americans who asked us as an amicus brief for the Iraqi High Tribunal to have Saddam Hussein tried for rape as a crime, as a war crime, because there was this systemic rape of women in that war, in the Iraq war. It was a tool. And I mean, what, in fact, by the time that actually sort of came to be before the court, it was, I say, it sounds an odd thing to say, but too late for him because he had been executed. But it did translate to people slightly lower down in their indictments. I think, you know, that's an opportunity I would never have got. That's not my area of practice even. I mean, obviously I do crime and then I did more general crime, but nothing like this. So what an amazing opportunity. But I should say also that, you know, the very small things that you do, actually I helped somebody who was the witness to a murder in the UK, a person with special needs. And I helped navigate the situation that he was in. He was a witness, and it was really trying to get the best outcomes for him and explain for him what would be appropriate, and also to explain to the CPS and everybody on the other side, because he was a witness to a murder of somebody he knew, by somebody who lived very, very close to him. So the whole thing was extremely scary. And also the issue of whether or not he should, you know, how he would give evidence and so on. So, you know, you can have the grandest, most extraordinary opportunity that I had, but also it was such a great thing to be involved with for this person, just in a sense at the other end of the spectrum, because it was very personal and it was very important to get it right. So both of them great opportunities.